Okay, we're back with another quick dive, and this time Michael's gonna share some insightful uses he's been using some of the generative AI tools for. First of all, we have launched a brand new artificial intelligence website that is, you know, understandably pretty phenomenal. And Michael's gonna talk a little bit about how he used some of the generative AI tools to build that.
Yeah, so I didn't use any AI. No, I'm just joking. It's funny because I actually had this thought when making the site. I think I mentioned it with the when we did the video with the AI about the AI videos I made. Is I was like, oh, I want to find some cool ways to use AI in this, in the site itself, because it's about AI, and then it like that in and of itself can be like an example. So on the AI website, I used it for some simple stuff that you would think, you know, like revising some copy. So taking a first draft and using that to kind of help iron things out. And then I also used it for some things such as taking, you know, some AI tools that were highlighting and using AI to help break it down into categories that make sense. So for instance, say there was one that was like visual design, like, you know, being able to plug in something very easily and say like, hey, based on the categories we made before, this is a tool that I'm adding to the site. Can you tell me the categories that apply to this? Which is very helpful for me because some of these tools that I'm not very familiar with. So it's nice to not have to know a bunch about a tool that I may not have used yet and then still be able to get it up on the site and get it categorized properly.
So which tools did you use to do this?
So I was using Gemini for this one. Because I started playing around with that a bit more and I actually really liked it. So I was using Gemini. And that's been pretty useful.
The important point here was you were using it as a partner, not as a replacement.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So I pretty much was using it. I was using it to kind of carry some of the heavy lifting to where I wasn't having to spend too much time really researching, you know, what these tools were, thinking of the best way to categorize them. It just saved me a lot of time and thinking and makes it to where future edits are like very straightforward because, you know, say we're going to add a new tool in there. It already has my discussion going and I can just say like, hey, can you give me the categories for this? Can you give me a couple sentence, summary of this? And I can get it plugged into the site in minutes.
That's a great use to give you the, brainstorm with you, the overall design, and it's sort of like an outline for the site to get you from point zero. You can start moving rather than you just starting from scratch.
Yeah. And due to the nature of the content, I feel like there's a pretty good chance that a lot of what it's putting out doesn't have to be revised like very much. But still, you know, I obviously proofread it. I look it over. And then, you know, other people that I'm working on the project with as well, they look it over. If we have to massage any of the copy, we do. Like I said, a lot of times just due to the nature of the type of content it is, a little write up about Notebook LM and how you would, you know, a good way to categorize that for. So if someone wants to see other tools that kind of align with it, a lot of times those don't even really need much editing. They come out pretty good, I would say, overall.
Did you use it for any coding?
I use it for some very simple, straightforward coding that just saved me a bunch of time. Like we've talked about on other podcasts, just some more mundane stuff. So on one of the pages, there's a drop-down menu where you can select some resources that you can go to and go view, some external pages. So that was real easy to say like, hey, can you make me the, can you make me some placeholder drop-down menu with a couple of options in it? And then once I got the email that contained the actual like copy and the links, then I just plugged those in, and it was it saved me a lot of time. And it was just one less thing I had to worry about, because all I knew, or I just knew that, oh, I can go to this tab, that placeholder code is right here. I put in the real options, and then bam, that's done.
Cool. You were talking about using it for some more fun and creative uses as well. So I know you have a little bit of a history in music. So tell us how you've been exploring that.
So I like messing around and making music. I've always had fun doing that. I don't claim to be good at it at all, but I think there is fun to be had with just working with AI. So I've been using Suno to make some songs, and what I've kind of been doing is I've been taking music, like types of music that I like, and obviously like moods, instruments, you can play, use that in the prompt, and then using that to have it create songs that are in some ways kind of like a mix of like genres and different bands I like and just the kind of music that I want to create. And then it's been really cool having that to then kind of have these quote unquote new songs, opposed to just listening to, a song that I like and then just copying that. It's been kind of cool having just this like kind of playground to where I can express a little bit of creativity, which kind of helps get the gears turning like overall, and then kind of being able to listen to these songs and just like analyze like, oh, what is AI doing that is making this capture that like sound and like theme and tone that I'm looking for. And I've used it to actually start serving as an inspiration to then start making original songs, not copying what like it created, but I don't know, there's just something about it that makes it kind of easier to then make my own thing, opposed to if I'm like, I don't know, I really like this Nirvana song, so I'm gonna listen to it a bunch and then rip it off and make a fake Nirvana song,
So I will interject a quick anecdote. I was playing with Suno one day, and I have negative music talent. I'm below zero. But I went into Claude, developed some lyrics from Claude, put them into Suno and put music to it. And listen, it was not a good song, but it definitely sparked some interest, and it was a lot of fun. So I would encourage anybody who wants to learn or just play, give it a shot. It's pretty cool to see what you can do with it.
I think there's something cool. That's a cool thing about like That's a cool thing I really like about AI is like I know there's like a discussion in and of itself that's way, grander than what we're looking to talk about, where it's like the creation aspect of it and all of that. But like what you were saying, if you're not inclined musically at all, literally never picked up an instrument, there is something cool to just being able to craft something and then like just have this thing that you've never heard before. And I know we've talked about it with other people in the past on the podcast, is like there is something to where even if you're not going to use anything you get at all, even if it's not really giving you what you're looking for, that like spitballing, throwing paint at the wall, at least gets like it can warm up, your engine to where you get in
I
that right
agree.
type of mind. So yeah, so a lot of times, even just like the working with a tool to create some music, that just gets my head, that gets me in the headspace to where then I do, turn on my stuff, I get my guitar, keyboard, whatever, and I'm in that headspace to get going.
Well, that's a pretty inspiring way to use it. So
Appreciate it.
I know there's another project that you've been working on that's pretty interesting. You want to tell us about that one?
Yes. So So my girlfriend really likes a particular card game. I won't mention it just because I don't know. I don't know how legal stuff works and I don't want to get in trouble, but like there's a card game that she really likes and we would play all the time. So I just had this thought. I was like, man, I wonder if I could make a digital version of this because she has friends and stuff that live in other states. So I just started working with, let's see, what was I using this? I think I was using ChatGPT for this one. I explained the game. I was looking to make a multiplayer online version of, and it exceeded even my expectations because it got to work and it even knew the cards in the deck. So
Wow.
it did all of the heavy lifting, and it was like, okay, this is a 120 or whatever card deck. It has these, and
Was
I.
it only text-based, or did you incorporate images as well?
No, it has a GUI, everything. So it kind of started, I think it was text-based at first because the first iteration, I don't think I actually tested. I like kind of actually started expanding pretty quickly, but I did implement like a GUI to where now you get little cards and it says what it is, values associated with it are on there. And slowly I was just adding the features, so it started out with just the cards like themselves. So imagine if, it was just a regular deck of playing cards, it would give you a king. And then I would be like,
Okay.
well, I need all the suits. And then so then it, it added that. And so I just kept expanding onto it. And in really no time, I had the base game. I had it running in my local browser to where I could play multiplayer. And then I started implementing some of her house rules. So maybe cards that her and her friend had created that were part of the deck now. And then I started adding other features into it that the first run through weren't working. And then I had a, I would say about in a hand, in just a couple of hours, I had about a 90% functioning version of the card game. And then I got to work with making it multiplayer. So you could be in California and someone else could be in New York and you could both go in and start playing. And I'm pretty much in the bug solving phase of that still right now, just kind of troubleshooting it, but it's been in various
That's pretty
forms of
cool.
working. It's been pretty interesting.
The code generation capabilities of these tools now just allow you to take whatever's in your head. You can go from imagination to working app in no time.
And what's really awesome too is it'll get you the tools you need to get that up and running. So for instance, it's using something called socket.io as a means to allow the game to run how it intends, because it didn't need that when I was just doing the local browser version, where on my computer I could open up two tabs and do it. But once I said that I wanted to put it up on a host and be able to play remotely with someone, that's when it's like, okay, I think it pretty much recommends it. It says, oh, we think socket.io would work for you and stuff. And then
Brilliant.
yeah and then did it implements the code that you need for that. It updates any pre-existing code that previously pointed to it being local and now is pointing to being hosted. If you're using Node, in this instance I'm using Node for it, it's telling me how to install, it walks you through how to install it, all of that. So it not only builds it walks you through how to enable and get the tools that you need. And the great thing is if you don't understand something, you could tell it to expand on it. And you could say, hey, what is you recommended socket, IO, what is it doing? And that's awesome.
Well, once we get the lawyers involved to determine the legality of it, I can't wait to play it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we can definitely test it out.
I'll throw it into AI and figure out a way to cheat to win.
There you go.
All right, Michael, thank you for taking us on a journey of three quick and cool uses.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for talking to me about it.
Thank you for listening to the Deeks.ai podcast, where Wake Forest innovators unpack the real-world magic of artificial intelligence through candid conversations. We hope you'll continue to join us as we explore how AI is transforming work across campus, one fascinating story at a time.